There we are on YouTube. And we'll just wait to see if we're on Facebook here. There we go. We're on the website. And we're on Facebook. All right. Well, happy Wednesday, everybody. If you are hopping on and joining, let me know you're there and watching, and hopefully you can hear me all right. I see a couple people on Facebook joining us, one person on YouTube, but yes, thanks for joining me for another Wednesday night Bible study in the book of Genesis. So this is week 6 in our study through this book. And so thanks for joining us. If this is your first time joining us, I would encourage you to go onto our website. All of the previous week's teachings are on our website. So that would be the Revelation series that we did previous to this. And then all the previous weeks of the Genesis series are on our website too. So if you go to npmbchurch.com and then look under sermons, you'll see the Genesis series and the Revelation series. So, hi Lori on Facebook and hi Suzanne on Facebook. Thanks for joining me tonight. So, like I said, this is week 6. Last week, we looked at Chapter 3 in Genesis, the fall of mankind is what it's usually called. And so we kind of walked through that narrative where the serpent comes and tempts Eve, basically, you know, feeding her lies about God. And, you know, did God really say that you weren't supposed to, you know, right? And he's twisting God's word and he's making God out to be a liar. And so we saw Eve essentially buy into those lies, and she took of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and she ate it. And then we're told that Adam was with her and he ate it as well, and that their eyes were open and they were naked and they hid. And so we have this act of rebellion in the garden, and then God comes and he looks for them and he investigates what happened. And then we know, if you were with us, these curses are pronounced on the serpent and on the woman and on the man. And Adam and Eve are banished from the Garden of Eden. And they can't come back. And God puts, you know, an angel guarding so that they can't come and eat from the tree of life and be stuck in this, you know, rebellious, sinful state. And so it was quite a sad chapter of the Bible to see these first human beings fall into sin and rebellion. But even in the midst of it, I think hopefully you noticed that there was some elements of God's grace in chapter 3, right? He promises the Savior. He clothes them with animal skins. He, like, on and on and on. All these elements where God still showed Adam and Eve grace. But essentially, paradise was lost. And mankind is cursed because of their rebellion, and they're kicked out of the garden. And so now what we're going to see as we keep going through Genesis, we're going to actually observe mankind plunging further and further and further and further into more sin and more sin and more rebellion. And it's actually going to get so bad, right, in these next 3 chapters, essentially, that God is going to say in chapter 6 that he regrets having ever made mankind. And then we know that the flood happens, right? That Noah was the only righteous person on the earth. And so God floods the earth. And so what we're going to see is, right, this chapter 3 is this initial act of rebellion. And then from there, it's just like this steady decline into more and more and more evil as time goes on. Even in this chapter, even in chapter 4, the chapter we're going to study tonight, we see more and more sin. Cain is going to murder his brother Abel. Lamech is going to take revenge, and he murders someone, and then he actually brags about it. And so we're going to just see, okay, things are going to get progressively worse. So what I want to do tonight is read Genesis chapter 4, and then we'll just kind of walk verse by verse through it and unpack it together. And as always, as we're going through, if you do have questions or if you have comments that you want to make, please type them in the comment section. And then that way I see them. I'm watching Facebook and YouTube and the website right now. And then I can answer those for you, or we can interact a little bit. Want it to be as interactive as possible. So I'll read Genesis 4. And if you have a Bible at home, you can follow along, or you can just listen. And we'll go from there. So Genesis 4, and starting in verse 1. Now Adam knew Eve, his wife, and she conceived and bore Cain, saying, I have gotten a man with the help of the Lord. And again she bore his brother Abel. Now Abel was a keeper of sheep, and Cain a worker of the ground. In the course of time, Cain brought to the Lord an offering of the fruit of the ground, and Abel also brought of the firstborn of his flock and of their fat portions. And the Lord had regard for Abel and his offering, but for Cain and his offering he had no regard. So Cain was very angry, and his face fell. The Lord said to Cain, why are you angry, and why has your face fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door. Its desire is for you, but you must rule over it. Cain spoke to Abel, his brother, and when they were in the field, Cain rose up against his brother Abel and killed him. Then the Lord said to Cain, where is Abel, your brother? He said, I do not know. Am I my brother's keeper? And the Lord said, what have you done? The voice of your brother's blood is crying to me from the ground. And now you are cursed from the ground, which has opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. When you work the ground, it shall no longer yield to you its strength. You shall be a fugitive and a wanderer on the earth. Cain said to the Lord, my punishment is greater than I can bear. Behold, you have driven me today away from the ground, and from your face I shall be hidden. I shall be a fugitive and a wanderer on the earth, and whoever finds me will kill me. Then the Lord said to him, not so. If anyone kills Cain, vengeance shall be taken on him sevenfold. And the Lord put a mark on Cain, lest any who found him should attack him. Then Cain went away from the presence of the Lord and settled in the land of Nod, east of Eden. Cain knew his wife, and she conceived and bore Enoch. When he built a city, he called the name of the city after the name of his son, Enoch. To Enoch was born Irad, and Irad fathered Mahujael, and Mahujael fathered Methushael, and Methushael fathered Lamech. And Lamech took two wives. The name of the one was Adah, and the name of the other Zillah. Adah bore Jabal. He was the father of those who dwell in tents and have livestock. His brother's name was Jubal. He was the father of all who play the lyre and pipe. Zillah also bore Tubal-Cain. He was the forger of all instruments of bronze and iron. The sister of Tubal-Cain was Naamah. Lamech said to his wives, Adah and Zillah, hear my voice, you wives of Lamech. Listen to what I say. I have killed a man for wounding me, a young man for striking me. If Cain's revenge is sevenfold, then Lamech's is 77-fold. And Adam knew his wife again, and she bore a son and called his name Seth, for she said, God has appointed for me another offspring instead of Abel, for Cain killed him. To Seth also, a son was born, and he called his name Enosh. At that time, people began to call upon the name of the Lord. So, chapter 4 is kind of split into three paragraphs, or three sections. And so verses 1 to 16 covers the two famous sons of Adam and Eve. I think you know, if you've grown up in the church, most of us know that story of Cain and Abel. But then verses 17 to 24 is an account of Cain's descendants, and it gives us a little bit of a genealogy of, you know, six or seven generations after Cain. And then verses 25 and 26 explains the origin of Seth. And this is the son through whom the Israelites actually trace their ancestry back to the first humans. They trace it through the line of Seth, not through the line of Cain. So that's how it's kind of split up into these three different sections. So verse 1, this is how it begins. Now Adam knew his wife, or knew Eve his wife, and she conceived and bore Cain, saying, I have gotten a man with the help of the Lord. So the way that this is actually worded suggests that Eve thought that the divinely promised seed had now come, right? So if you remember in Genesis 3:15, God is speaking to the serpent, and, you know, he says, you're going to crawl on your belly and you'll eat dust. And then in verse 15, he says this, I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your offspring and her offspring. He shall bruise your head, and you shall bruise his heel. Right, so there was this promise, okay, there's going to be a seed, an offspring from the woman who one day is going to bruise the head of the serpent. And so I think just the way that verse 1 is worded is I believe that Eve thought that already this promise was coming true, that Cain was the fulfillment of that promise that God made. Because verse 1, right, Eve says, I have gotten a man with the help of the Lord. And it could also be translated, I have received a man, namely the Lord. So I think Eve thought, okay, God promised that one day someone, like my seed, my offspring, would come and, you know, crush the serpent's head. And I think Eve thought, here it is, right? That didn't take very long. And so you and I, as the reader, right, we know that that's not the case. Eve was mistaken. And even as the text goes on, you'll see, okay, we can see clearly Cain is not the promised one who was going to bruise Satan's head. He falls into sin and evil quite quickly in the narrative. So Cain is born, and then verse 2, Eve has another son. She bore his brother Abel. So you have these first, you know, sons born, Cain and Abel. And verse 2 shows us the differences between these two boys. Abel was a keeper of sheep, a keeper of sheep, so he was a shepherd. And Cain, we're told, was a worker of the ground, so he was a farmer. So you have these two different kind of occupations. Abel was a shepherd, he took care of sheep, and Cain took care of the land. He was a worker of the ground. He planted crops, and that was his occupation and his work that he did. And so here's what's interesting. Verse 3 says, in the course of time, Cain brought to the Lord an offering of the fruit of the ground. So in the course of time, I'm not 100% sure what that means, but it's like when the time was right. In the course of time, Cain brings an offering, and we're told Abel brings something too, right? Cain brings an offering of the fruit of the ground, and Abel brings the firstborn of his flock and of their fat portions. So you have both brothers kind of bring something from their occupations, right? Cain brings fruit from the ground, and that doesn't necessarily mean fruit. It can just mean it could be grain, it could be vegetables, like whatever. He just means he brought the parts of the crop, the fruit of the crop, right? And so he brings that. And then Abel brings the firstborn of his flock and their fat portions. And here's the interesting part. In the end of verse 4, it says, the Lord had regard for Abel and the offering, but for Cain and his offering, he had no regard. And so the question that we should ask is, well, why? Why did God approve of Abel's offering but not Cain's? Like, what's the difference? Why did God pick one over the other? And there's a couple of clues, maybe, but we need to know that this is not meant to elevate, you know, shepherds over farmers. It's not meant to say, well, God prefers shepherds over farmers or animals over plants. It's nothing like that, actually. First off, one of the clues is that it says that Abel brought the firstborn of his flock and of their fat portions. The firstborn of a flock indicates that this was actually a costly sacrifice. Abel brought something that was actually the best of his flock. And so that perhaps suggests that Abel had a greater devotion to the Lord than Cain did. The text doesn't say that Cain brought the first fruits of his crops. All it says is that he brought an offering of the fruit of the ground. So just notice that slight difference, right? Cain brings an offering, sure, but Abel brings the firstborn of his flock. So I think there's maybe a clue there. But even as readers, we aren't able to detect any solid difference between the two brothers and their offerings. I mean, they both brought an offering, that's for sure. And I think it maybe comes back to an internal issue going on. Maybe it's an attitude that Abel possessed as he brought his offering that Cain didn't quite have. And the reason I say that is that Hebrews 11:4 says this: by faith, Abel offered to God a more acceptable sacrifice than Cain, through which he was commended as righteous, God commending him by accepting his gifts, and through his faith, though he died, he still speaks. So Hebrews says that Abel brought a sacrifice by faith, and it was more acceptable than Cain. So maybe there's a clue there that we go, okay, Cain could have just been going through the motions and brought a sacrifice without actually any heartfelt devotion, and yet Abel, by faith, was offering this sacrifice. So God has regard, meaning he accepts Abel's offering, but for Cain and his offering, he has no regard. And so we're told that Cain is very angry and his face fell. So God asks him in verse 6, why are you angry? And why has your face fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door. Its desire is for you, but you must rule over it. So here's what's interesting. Cain is very upset, we're told, a little bit depressed, right? His face fell. And God asks him, why are you angry? Why are you depressed? And he gives Cain a choice here, essentially. There's still time for Cain to turn and please God, but he's going to have to overcome the domination of sin, right? And it's described that way. Sin is crouching at the door. And what's amazing is that the wording in verse 7, you know, its desire is for you, but you must rule over it. It's the exact same wording used in chapter 3, verse 16. In chapter 3, verse 16, to the woman, right, he says, I'm going to multiply your pain in childbearing. And then he says this, your desire shall be for your husband, and he shall rule over you. Chapter 4, verse 7, talking about sin, its desire is for you, but you must rule over it. It's almost identical wording between what God says in chapter 3 and chapter 4. And so really, it's a callback, right, to the strife that now exists in the marriage relationship. Eve's desire or urge will be against Adam, and Adam in his sinfulness will desire to rule over his wife. And it's the same wording. Sin's desire is for Cain, meaning its desire is against Cain. It wants to destroy Cain, and Cain, must rule over it. Like, don't give in to that sinful urge, Cain. And there's actually quite a few parallels between chapter 3 and chapter 4. And it's actually structured that way that there's a lot of similarities. So, for instance, chapter 3, verse 7, they knew that they were naked. Chapter 4, verse 1, Adam knew his wife. Chapter 3, verse 9, God asked them, "Where are you?" Chapter 4, verse 9, we're going to see God ask Cain, "Where is your brother?" Both those questions. Where are you to Adam and Eve? And God says to Cain, "Where is your brother?" Chapter 3, verse 17, there is a cursing of the earth. Chapter 4, verse 11, we're going to see there's a cursing of the earth. Chapter 3, 24, sinners are banished from God's presence. Chapter 4, verse 14, a sinner is banished from God's presence. Chapter 3, verse 24, they're sent east of Eden. Chapter 4, verse 16, he's sent east from Eden. So there's all, it's like these, it's so many parallels between Adam and Eve's sin and God's response and the punishment, and Cain's sin and God's response and the punishment. There's so many parallels between the two. So we have the setup, right? There's this tension created in the narrative. Abel and Cain present sacrifices. God accepts Abel's. He doesn't accept Cain's. Cain is very angry and depressed, and God warns Cain that sin is crouching, wanting to destroy him, right? You have to rule over it, Cain. Don't give in. And so verse 8, it says this, Cain spoke to Abel, his brother, and when they were in the field, Cain rose up against his brother Abel and killed him. So here, we have the first murder in the Bible, a brother killing his own brother. And verse 8 is interesting because in our translations it says, Cain spoke to Abel, his brother. But the original meaning of that Hebrew word that we translate spoke, the original meaning of that Hebrew word is to see or be on the lookout. So it actually, a more accurate translation would be Cain looked for Abel, his brother. And so verse 8 is kind of interesting now, and that would make sense because of the parallels we've seen already between chapters 3 and 4. God, right, what happened when Adam and Eve sinned? God walked through the garden looking for Adam, right? And here we have Cain looking for his brother Abel, walking through a field trying to find him. And so then Cain gives in to that sin that was crouching at his door, and he kills his brother. And then verse 9, God asked Cain, "Where is Abel, your brother?" Right? Think about that. God in chapter 3, he asks to Adam, "Where are you?" And now in chapter 4, God asks Cain, "Where is Abel, your brother?" And the answer that Cain gives to God is just absolutely cold-hearted. He says, "I don't know. Am I my brother's keeper?" Like, basically, he lies, saying that he doesn't know where Abel is. And then he basically says, like, isn't my job to always know where my brother is? Am I my brother's keeper? Right? It's so cold-hearted. And so then God says in verse 10, "What have you done? The voice of your brother's blood is crying to me from the ground." And so that question, right, we have a question mark in our translations, chapter 10, or verse 10. What have you done? But that's actually not a question. It shouldn't be a question mark. God is actually making a statement. It's an accusation. Like, what have you done? Right? He's not asking a question. He's making a statement. He's not seeking information from Cain. Hey, what have you done? He's actually saying, what have you done? Your brother's blood is crying out to me from the ground. And that's actually mentioned a few times in the New Testament, Matthew 23:35, it says, this is Jesus, so that on you may come all the righteous blood shed on earth, from the blood of innocent Abel to the blood of Zechariah, the son of Berechiah, whom you murdered between the sanctuary and the altar. So Jesus is speaking to the Pharisees, and he says, on you is the all of the righteous blood shed, from Abel, right, the first innocent blood shed, to Zechariah, the last murder victim in the Old Testament. So basically, Jesus is saying, all of the blood shed in the Old Testament is on you. And then in Hebrews 12:24, it says this, and to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, and to the sprinkled blood that speaks a better word than the blood of Abel. So there's Abel mentioned again. Hello, Babaram, watching on Facebook. Thank you for tuning in from Nepal. Good to see you on here. So God says to Cain, what have you done, right? Your brother's blood is crying out to me from the ground. And so verse 11 now is the punishment. So remember, right, God in chapter 3, he asks Adam and Eve where they are. They confess, and then God gives them the punishment. So verse 11 is the punishment for Cain. Now you are cursed from the ground, which has opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. When you work the ground, it shall no longer yield to you its strength. You shall be a fugitive and a wanderer on the earth. So really, the punishment fits the crime, right? Cain is a worker of the ground, and God says, because you've done this, you're no longer going to be able to cultivate the soil, right? It's actually cursed now. So it's interesting, twice now, right, human sin has had a bearing on the fertility of the earth, right? God intended humanity to enjoy the earth's bounty and for the earth to be fruitful and give them what they need. And now twice, human beings sin, and that sin distances people not only from God, but also from nature, right? In chapter 3, God says to the man, cursed is the ground because of you. Right? In pain you shall eat it all the days of your life. And now God says to Cain, you are cursed from the ground. When you work the ground, it will no longer yield to you its strength. So now, again, sin has an effect on the very soil, the creation itself. So in this curse is a few different things. You're cursed from the ground. The ground's not going to yield to you anymore. And you are now going to be a fugitive and a wanderer. So Cain's punishment in verses 10 to 12, in some ways, it is worse than death because he's going to lose all sense of belonging and identification with the community. He's going to be rootless and detached now. And so in verse 13, Cain complains that very thing. He says, my punishment is greater than I can bear. Behold, you've driven me today away from the ground, and from your face I shall be hidden. I shall be a fugitive and a wanderer on the earth, and whoever finds me will kill me. So Cain is basically, you know, in his opinion, his punishment's too harsh. Now he's only going to get a meager return from the soil. He's hidden from God's face. He's forced into a life of being a nomad and wandering and being a fugitive. And now he says, I'm open game for anybody who meets me. Right? Whoever finds me is gonna kill me, Cain says. And that's actually quite ironic because here's Cain who literally just murdered his own brother. And now he tells God, this isn't fair. Because of you, God, now someone is going to murder me. So do you see the irony of that? He's complaining and he's just murdered his own brother. So now, in this drastic turnabout, we see God's grace that he shows to Cain. And again, think back to chapter 3. God curses Adam and Eve. He gives them consequences for their rebellion. And yet he still shows them grace. God says they're still going to have kids. They'll still have food. God clothes them with animal skins. God banishes them from the garden so that they don't eat from the tree of life and get stuck in this rebellious state. So God shows them grace all throughout their rebellion. And now God is going to show grace to Cain. In verse 15, right, Cain has just said, this, you know, my punishment is too severe. Someone's going to kill me. God says in verse 15, not so. If anyone kills Cain, vengeance shall be taken on him sevenfold. And the Lord put a mark on Cain, lest any who found him should attack him. So God gives Cain a divine promise and an act of divine protection. Now, we have no idea what that mark was, right? And there's some speculation on what it could be, but we have no idea if it was on his forehead, or we have no idea what the mark was. All we know is that God promised Cain, hey, if anyone takes vengeance on you, vengeance will be taken on them sevenfold. And then he puts this mark on Cain, whatever it was, so that anyone who saw that, they wouldn't attack him. So it was meant to be a sign, right? If anyone came to attack Cain, they would see this mark and know, okay, this guy is marked and protected by God. Verse 16 says, then Cain went away from the presence of the Lord and settled in the land of Nod, east of Eden. So here, like, it so parallels chapter 3, right? He drove out the man at the east of the Garden of Eden, right? So again, people, because of sin, are driven from the presence of the Lord and have these consequences, right? And it's interesting, Nod, the word Nod, means wandering. So he settles in the land of wandering east of Eden. So there's that narrative, right? Cain and Abel. And then next in chapter 4, we get a bit of a genealogy, right, from the line of Cain. And so this is what it says, verse 17. Cain knew his wife, and she conceived and bore Enoch. So naturally, the question is, where did Cain get his wife? Where did he get a wife? Right, Adam and Eve have Cain and Abel, and then it says Cain knew his wife. And you go, well, where did this wife come from? And I love that the text doesn't even bother to address this, because to ancient readers, that question was actually irrelevant. It didn't matter to them. And so it's just mentioned like that. Cain knew his wife. And we as modern readers go, wait a second, that's impossible. Where did Cain get a wife from? But to an ancient reader, it was just like, yep, this is part of the narrative. This is the oral tradition that's been passed down. It wouldn't have bothered them. So the most logical question to this answer, or the most logical answer to this question, rather, is that Cain married a sister of his. And some of you might be thinking, well, wait a second, I thought that the Old Testament law condemned that. And you're right, Leviticus 18:9, you shall not uncover the nakedness of your sister. But the law would have been irrelevant at this stage in human history. The law hadn't been given yet. And early on, right after the fall of mankind, the effects of sin on genetics weren't as prevalent as they are today. And that's why people lived for so long. Right? In Genesis 5:5, it says this: Thus all the days that Adam lived were 930 years old. Like, Adam almost lived 1,000 years. And why? Because the effects of sin on genetics and on their bodies wasn't as rampant in the beginning, right? We're told in verse 3, when Genesis 5, verse 3, when Adam had lived 130 years, he fathered a son in his own likeness, Seth. And so you have to think, okay, Adam lived 930 years, almost 1,000 years. How many children could Adam and Eve have had in 930 years? I mean, we're talking potentially hundreds of children. And so I did some study. So the couple that has had the most number of children recorded, his name is Fyodor Vasilyev. the vassal Yevs, and from between the year 1725 and 1765, so in 40 years, him and his wife had 69 children together. So think about that. And there was a bunch of triplets and quadruplets and things like that. And that's why they could have so many. But in the span of 40 years, one couple had almost 70 children. And so we read that Adam lived 930 years. And in that span of time, like, they could have had hundreds upon hundreds of children. And so it's not a stretch to say that, yeah, Cain, and, you know, we get names of certain children, but we don't get names of all of them, right? And it says this in Genesis 5, Genesis 5, verse 4. It says, the days of Adam after he followed Seth were 800 years, and he had other sons and daughters. We're not told how many, but there could have been hundreds. So Cain logically married one of his sisters. And so it says that he knew his wife, he had a son named Enoch, and he built a city which he called Enoch after his first son. So there's an interesting detail. God told Cain, you're going to be a wanderer and a fugitive. And now we have Cain settling down and building a city. So either God, after Cain wandered and was a fugitive for a while, God said, okay, you don't have to be a fugitive anymore. Or Cain just completely disregarded what God said and went and built a city and settled down anyways. So he has a son, Enoch. He builds a city and he names the city Enoch. Then we're told that to Enoch was born Irad. Irad fathered Mahujael. Mahujael fathered Methushael, and Methushael fathered Lamech. And then Lamech took two wives, Adah and Zillah. And here we have the first case of polygamy, right? Going against the biblical mandate where marriage is one man and one woman. Here we have a guy that says, I'm going to take two wives. And you have to know that just because the Bible comments that this happened doesn't mean that God approves of it happening. Right? Sometimes we read things in the Bible and the Bible puts some pretty terrible things in there. That doesn't mean that God approves of it. It's just that God is telling the story of what happened. Right? So just because it says that Lamech took two wives, it doesn't mean that God gives him the thumbs up and say, good for you, Lamech. The scriptures are just telling that's what happened, right? So here we have a guy, Lamech, who goes against what the biblical mandate and precedent for marriage is, one man, one woman, and he takes two wives. And so Lamech and Adah, they have a son, Jabal, the father of those who dwell in tents and have livestock. And Jabal has a brother, Jubal, the father of all who play the lyre and the pipe. And Lamech and Zillah, his other wife, they have a son, Tubal-Cain, the forger of all instruments of bronze and iron, and Tubal-Cain has a sister named Nama. So I thought it would be helpful. I'm a visual person, and so just to kind of see the flow of Cain's family tree. So you have Cain, right? And he has a son, Enoch. And Enoch, we're told, has a son named Irad. And Irad, stay with me, I know these names are weird, has a son, Mahujael. And Mahujael has a son named Methushael. And then we get Lamech, right? The famous Lamech. And so here we have, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 generations from Cain. We have Lamech, who then takes two wives, and he has four children, Jabal, Jubal, Tubal, Cain, hopefully you can see this on the screen, and Nama, his daughter. So there's the family tree, right, of Cain. And so you see these generations from Cain all the way to Lamech's four children. And so here's what's interesting, though. And we're told a few things about some of Lamech's kids. We're told Jabal is the father of all who live in tents and have livestock. So like animal husbandry, the idea of taking care of livestock comes through this son, Jabal. He's the father of all who live in tents and take care of livestock. Then you have Jubal, who says he's the father of all who play the lyre and the pipe. So you have music coming from this line. And then you have Tubal-Cain, who we're told is the father of all, the forger of all instruments of bronze and iron. So here you see Cain, which we would say is kind of a wicked line. He's a murderer, and then, you know, it just kind of gets worse and worse and worse as he goes on. But from that line, you see animal husbandry, you see music, you see metallurgy. And so through this disobedient line of Cain, many of the world's significant cultural discoveries emerged, which I think is a sign of God's common grace. He uses even evil people to bring about good in the world. So Lamech is an interesting guy, and we get a little bit of an info about him. It says in verse 23 that Lamech brags to his two wives about killing a man for wounding him. So he takes revenge, right? He says, I've killed a man for wounding me, a young man for striking me. And he says this in verse 27 or 24. If Cain's revenge is sevenfold, then Lamech's is 77-fold. So think about what he's doing. God said to Cain, if anyone kills Cain, vengeance shall be taken on him sevenfold. And so Lamech says, if Cain's revenge is sevenfold, Lamech's revenge is 77-fold. Basically, Lamech is boasting that his vengeful passion makes him safer than Cain, right? If Cain was protected seven times, I'm protected 77 times because I killed that guy. So you kind of go, man, five generations you get to Lamech, and he does not sound like a very nice man. It seems arrogant, and he's boastful, and he's proud that he killed the guy. Not great stuff. So what's interesting is that you have Cain and this terrible murder that he commits, and then you just kind of see through the family line that it's getting worse. Lamech takes two wives. Lamech boasts about killing someone. He's just arrogant. And you're going, okay, humanity seems to not be getting better. And so in verses 25 and 26, this last section speaks of another son born to Adam and Eve. So Eve bears a son and names him Seth. And she said, God has appointed for me another offspring instead of Abel, for Cain killed him. And then we're told that Seth has a son and names him Enosh. And this whole dark chapter, this dark chapter showing the decline of humanity into more and more and more sin, ends like this. At that time, people began to call upon the name of the Lord. So even in the midst of a dark chapter, there's this glimmer of hope, right? You have Cain's sin and rebellion, and you see the familial consequences of that throughout the generations, but it actually ends with hope, right? Seth is born, Enosh is born, and it ends by saying, at that time, people began to call upon the name of the Lord. So there's some hope. Okay, maybe we're going to see, right, people turning to God. People are starting to call on the name of the Lord. Maybe they can turn this around a little bit. So that's all I have for chapter 4. I know it's a little bit shorter tonight, but hopefully it's been interesting nonetheless, and just some things that maybe you can think about and chew on throughout the rest of your week. I've really enjoyed preparing these because I think Genesis is one of those books that most of us know a lot of these stories, right? Adam and Eve and the fall of mankind and Cain and Abel and the flood. Many of us know these things. But I've even noticed as I've done some study, like, man, there's just little nuggets of things that I've never really noticed before, or things that you just kind of go, aha, that makes it so much more interesting, or it just clears up some of the confusion. And so hopefully that is the same for you as well. So if you know people that usually watch and couldn't make it on tonight, I'm going to upload this tomorrow on the website, so it'll be on the podcast and things like that. So thanks for tuning in, and hopefully this has been good, and I will talk to you next week.